Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're going straight into modeling evolutionary systems.
That's right.
If you're, you know, maybe an engineering student or just interested in theoretical biology, artificial life, AI, evolutionary systems, well, this is for you.
Absolutely. We're going to be digging into how really complex, almost intelligent seeming systems can emerge from processes that mimic evolution.
So not programmed step by step, but evolved.
Exactly. Moving beyond just telling a system how to do something. It's fascinating stuff thinking about how life itself achieved its complexity without, you know, a master plan.
And this isn't entirely new thinking, is it? I recall John Holland back in the 60s was asking some big questions.
Definitely. Foundational questions. Like, how does evolution produce organisms so well adapted to unpredictable worlds? And how do these organisms learn? Adapt based on experience.
And the big one for computing, maybe. Right. How do we get computers to solve problems just by telling them what we want, not the whole procedure?
Those are the core challenges, really. And Holland's insight, a key one, was that many of these problems in nature or engineering boil down to optimization.
Optimization, like finding the best settings.
Pretty much. Finding that sweet spot, the best combination of parameters in a really complex space, whether it's for an engine or, well, an animal surviving.
Got it. So our mission today is to unpack these evolutionary systems. What are the basic ideas? How are they different from other complex systems? And, you know, what can they do for us, especially in AI?
Sounds like a plan. Let's jump in.
Okay, where do we start?
Let's start with the core engine, optimization through selection. As we just touched on, loads of complex problems are essentially about finding the best mix of variables, the peak in some possibility landscape.
Right, and that's where things like genetic algorithms come in. GAs.
Exactly. GAs are directly inspired by natural selection. Instead of trying one solution, you have a whole population of potential solutions.
Like a brainstorming session inside the computer.
Kind of, yeah. Each potential solution is represented by a sort of genetic code.
Right.
Then you mimic evolution. You vary the codes, mix them up, change bits, and the fitter solutions, the ones that work better, are more likely to reproduce, to pass on their code.
So the population evolves towards better answers over time.
Hopefully, yes. And we should also mention related ideas like evolutionary strategies, ES, or evolutionary programming. Slightly different mechanics, maybe, but the same core idea. Improve through variation and selection.
What I find really interesting, especially thinking about AI and engineering, is that you said GAs work on the descriptions of solutions, not the solutions themselves.
That's a crucial point. It's the genetic code. The description that gets tweaked and combined. They use that modified code to build and test the actual solution.
Why is that separation so important?
Well, it echoes von Neumann's ideas about self-replicating machines. We talked about that before, I think.
We did, yeah.
The idea is that having this blueprint, this description you can change, it unlocks a way to build up complexity generation after generation. It's a powerful mechanism. People like Goldberg, Mitchell, DeYoung really laid the groundwork here.
Okay, so GAs use this external selection on encoded descriptions. How's that different from, say, self-organization? We've talked about things like cellular automata, where patterns just emerge from local rules.
Good question. It's a key difference. Both can lead to complex patterns from lots of interacting parts, but why order emerges is different.
How so?
In evolutionary strategies, the order comes from that external pressure, the fitness function. It's the environment or whatever criterion we set, saying this is better.
So it's not just internal dynamics playing out. There's an outside judge scoring the results.
Precisely. ES models natural selection, focusing on selecting, varying, inheriting information stored in those memory structures, the code. Self-organization is more about the physics, the material dynamics, how parts interact locally to form patterns without that explicit external grading.
Right.
Brenner used a nice analogy, ES, using a Turing tape, a symbolic description. And folks like Rocha and Hordijk stress how vital stable memory structures are for holding on to that information.
So, like, a snowflake forming is self-organization based on physics. But an animal evolving camouflage over generations is more like an evolutionary strategy driven by predators selecting against less camouflaged ones.
Perfect analogy.
Yes.
Exactly. Now, things get really interesting when you start combining these ideas. Selection and self-organization.
How does that work?
By adding a developmental stage,
yeah,
sometimes called artificial ontogeny.
Okay, so you're not just evolving the final thing, but evolving the recipe for building the final thing.
You got it. You evolve the blueprint, the instructions for growth or assembly.
An intermediate step.
Yes, between the genotype, the code, and the phenotype, the final solution. And this opens up huge possibilities.
Like what?
Well, one way is to encode rules for how the parts assemble after they're initially specified by the genes. Think post-translation rules. Buckley talked about this. Or using things like L-system grammars, as Wilson explored. Simple rules generating really complex branching structures, like a plant growing.
And the big payoff there is scalability, isn't it?
Absolutely. Trying to directly encode, say, a huge neural network in a GA is tough. The search space is massive.
Right.
But if you evolve a compact set of developmental rules that generates that network, you've made the evolutionary search much, much more manageable.
That makes sense. It's like writing a program to draw a picture instead of specifying every single pixel.
Exactly. That's where people like Kitano, Grewal, Ballou, Stanley, they've made real progress, especially evolving complex things like neural nets using these indirect methods.
So the development process itself introduces a kind of self-organization guided by the evolved rules.
Precisely. Early work even used things like Boolean networks, Dellert and Beer, Kitano again, to model genetic interactions during development. The GA evolves the rules for building the network, and the network's behavior then determines the final traits. You get emergent morphology structure arising spontaneously.
The shape isn't directly in the genes, it emerges from the developmental dynamics.
That's the core idea. And a neat side effect, as Wagner noted, is that modularity often pops up. Useful subsystems evolved through these rules tend to get reused, like building blocks.
And this research keeps evolving too, right? Looking at even finer detail.
Oh, yes. People are modeling more nuanced biological mechanisms now. Things like transcription regulation, how genes are turned on and off work by Real, Hallinan, and Wiles, or even RNA editing, which Rocha and others looked into.
So getting closer to real biology.
Trying to, yes. Yeah. It gives a richer picture of how genotype, phenotype, and environment all interact and potentially reveals more design principles we can borrow, as Huang and colleagues suggest.
Okay, so combining external selection like GAs with these self-organizing developmental processes seems incredibly powerful.
It really is. And this leads nicely into the idea of selected self-organization. Rocha coined that term, I believe.
Selected self-organization, what's the gist?
It's where the external selection, the GA acting on the symbolic memory, actively shapes and guides the system's internal self-organizing dynamics.
So the GA isn't just picking finished products, it's picking systems that are good at organizing themselves in useful ways.
You've nailed it. It's shaping the rules that govern the self-organization.
Okay.
And while, sure, self-organization can happen in purely dynamic systems without symbols or selection, their potential for real, open-ended evolution creating truly novel complexity is pretty limited.
Mm.
Rocha, Vasas, they've pointed this out, linking back to von Neumann's criteria.
Why limited?
Without that stable symbolic memory like DNA, how do you reliably store and pass on innovations?
Right. If a system just happens to fall into a good state, how does it remember how it got there or tell its offspring?
Exactly. Symbolic codes give you that stable medium. You can reliably build complex things from static descriptions. Much better than, say, trying to reproduce just by self-inspection, which Rocha argued against. Imagine life based only on proteins copying themselves directly biochemically, way harder than using DNA as a separate instruction set.
Okay, that clarifies the power of having that symbolic layer. So we've gone from basic GAs, added development, and now we have this idea of selection actively guiding self-organization through memory. It feels like we're building a layered understanding.
Absolutely. And the tools we're using, they really come from that intersection of artificial life, bio-inspired computing, evolutionary systems theory. We started with simple dynamic systems, good for understanding basic self-organization, but limited evolutionarily.
Then the von Neumann-inspired systems separating description and machine, adding symbolic memory, external selection, that's GAs.
Right. Memory-based selective strategies. Selection acts on the memory, the code, changing the structures it produces.
But the most powerful picture seems to be these hybrid systems.
Definitely. Integrating both mechanisms, self-organization and selection, these memory-based selected self-organizing systems. Patty and Rosesic Leonardi talk about the semiotic closure of genotype-phenotype maps here, this intricate self-referential link between code and organism. It allows for control, adaptation.
And complexity across different scales, right? Multi-scale organization.
Exactly. Patty, Wilson, they've explored this deeply. And we see practical examples everywhere.
Like what?
Well, evolving neural nets with L systems and GAs, coupling GAs to cellular automata for emergent computation. Even our own adaptive immune system, it's a kind of memory-based selected self-organization, selecting effective immune cells.
Wow. So studying these artificial systems actually gives us insights into real biology.
That's the whole life as it could be angle. By building systems with different mixes of selection and self-organization, we can probe that fundamental question in evolution, the credit assignment problem.
Meaning, how much is due to direct natural selection versus the inherent tendencies of matter to self-organize?
Precisely. It's a way to experimentally tease apart those contributions.
And the applications we mentioned earlier, bugs, boids, robots, social dynamics, immunity, they all draw on these ideas.
Hugely. Each is a massive field, but they often leverage these principles. Evolutionary robotics is a great example.
Oh, so?
You evolve neural controllers. That's the memory-based selection on the network structure and weights.
Okay.
And the resulting network learns and adapts to control the robot in its environment that involves self-organizing dynamics within the neural network itself.
So it brings both together.
It does. Though, you know, evolving a complete robot body and brain purely through selection and self-organization, that's still a grand challenge. A long-term goal for artificial life shows how much more there is to figure out.
Definitely. Okay, as we wrap this up, what's the main takeaway for listeners?
I think it's that evolutionary systems, taking cues from nature, are incredibly powerful for solving complex problems, letting solutions emerge rather than programming them directly.
And that mix of external selection and internal self-organization, especially using symbolic codes and developmental steps, is key.
Absolutely fundamental. That interplay unlocks the door to creating much more complex, adaptive, maybe even genuinely intelligent artificial systems down the line.
Which leaves us with a big thought, doesn't it? If these methods are so powerful, what are the limits? Can we truly replicate the open-ended creativity of natural evolution? And for everyone listening, especially those in engineering or AI or biology, where should we focus next? Where are the most exciting frontiers in artificial life and AI based on these ideas? Something to chew on.
Definitely food for thought. We really hope folks will dig into some of the work we've mentioned and keep exploring this area. It's a fascinating place where biology, computing, and engineering meet. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Thank you.